Make a call meeting to order, please. Call for a moment of silence. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Piece of housekeeping, if anyone has any electronic devices, we would appreciate it if you would turn them off during the meeting. Thank you. We could do roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
First item on the agenda is audience participation. We have a sign-up sheet, I believe. And we have Ron Snyder and Kathy Taggart. Would you care to make a presentation to the council? You would come forward, please. State your name and your address for the record, please.
Anything that came before this didn't happen. My name is Ron Snyder, and in the Haida Nation, I'm known as Dune. I live at 3432 Sweet Road, Blaine.
I'm Kathy Taggart, and I'm known in the Tlingit Nation as Kana'a, and I'm also at 3432 Sweet Road in Blaine.
Welcome, Ron and Kathy.
Thank you. Something very amazing is about to happen in and for the town of Blaine. On July 24th at 1 o'clock, canoes representing the Gunuk family, mostly Haida and Tlingit and others, canoes from the Semiahmoo Nation just across the border, hopefully will be joining us if they can come across the border. They're working on that. And the Lummi Nation will be definitely joining us. We're also supported by the Swinomish Nation, otherwise known as the Lakano neighborhood. And what we're doing is historic, because canoes have not made Blaine, not a pass-through, but an actual destination since before statehood. I mean, think about that, before statehood. At one time, canoes actually came here on purpose, but after statehood, and about the year after Blaine was incorporated, canoes did not come here as a destination. We know that from talking to elders in the Semiahmoo tribe. So this is really special. In addition, the Haida and the Tsimshian and the Tlingit were often thought of not unlike the Vikings. We came and we raided, and it wasn't always the best of relations. One of the amazing things about canoe journeys that we do and have been doing for a number of years is the healing that takes place. And coming to Blaine with nations coming from both sides of the border, Haida and Tlingit being welcomed here on the shores of Blaine, This is a moment in time. It's very special. Our family has carved 9 canoes. You're looking at one of them right now called the Gunuk. And we're going to play a video that we made, The Journey to Squaxin. I don't know if you had enough time to see the latter part of it. It's 5 minutes long. But in there, there's a potlatch. And a potlatch gifting takes place. The next day, July 25th, also at 1 o'clock, there will be a potlatch in Blaine at the Telescope Beach. And there will be gifting, there will be singing and dancing and storytelling and celebration. And I invite you to join us, both for the landing as well as for the potlatch. This is a very special opportunity for all of us. While this is playing, we're going to play a 1-minute song that Kathy and myself, we wrote this. And it's played on a flute, it's played on rattles that were taken from Drayton Harbor. These are our own shells. And she'll play a drum, and Kathy, if you'd show your drawing. Kathy also paints, and as many of you know, she's an artist, and she does all of our native artwork. So while this is playing, we're going to play Eagle Song for you. We played this at our house, the Circle of Trees, and it drew two ravens in that circled our house for 15 minutes while we played it, until a red-tailed hawk came and chased away the ravens, and it circled while we played. And then an eagle came and chased away the red-tailed hawk and stayed until we stopped playing. And when it left, it gave a call that you probably all have heard since we live in Blaine, that the eagle makes. And at the end of this song, you'll hear that call. Kathy and myself are here to celebrate with you. We look forward to you joining us on July 24th at Telescope Beach when the news comes to our shore after well over 100 years of returning to Blaine. We invite you to come to Potlatch and celebrate with us. You know, many years when Potlatch was illegal, it was illegal to have canoes even. We now have canoes. We carve our own canoes. We are coming to your shores. We are coming to the Semiahmoo shore. We are coming to the Lummi shores. These have always been all of our shores. And starting in 1890, they became Blaine shores. And we invite you to join us. In Haida, Hawa. Please, thank you.
Thank you, Ronnie.
If you want to see the rest of the video and a longer presentation, it will be at the Chamber the first weekend.
I was just going to say, and Sherry can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is our 125th anniversary this year.
It is.
That is correct.
May 20th.
May 20th. And it's quite an honor for us to celebrate this anniversary along with the canoes coming to our shores.
It's a very powerful moment.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on our agenda is written communications. Do we have any, Sherry?
We received a notice dated May 27th from Birch Bay Water and Sewer District regarding Roger Brown's retirement. I think Cheryl called everybody to find out who would be attending tomorrow. And if you need any additional information, please feel free to contact me. And then we received an email dated May 21st from John Urich regarding the vehicles blocking the intersections while waiting for trains to clear.
We had an opportunity to respond to John at all in any way.
I think that the staff, we discussed that today, and the staff was considering responding to that for him. I'm not sure who would be responding, though.
Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. And on the consent agenda, we have approval of bills in the amount of $148,967.80. Approval of council minutes for May the 11th, 2015. I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Next item on the agenda is a public hearing, and it's for Ordinance 15-2863, amending Title 15, establishing new boathouse and covered moorage fire code regulations, and amending certain marina fire code regulations. Would you like to introduce that subject?
Yes. The item before you is something that we introduced 2 weeks ago, and so we requested that you schedule a public hearing. We did have the full ordinance available at that time, and it was provided to you. It was on the website. We made some really minor changes in there. We found a couple of typos, but it's the same thing before you today. We also sent out notices to the marina boathouse owners. The letter is included in your packet. We tried to be very clear in that because, you know, reading this kind of regulation is not always the easiest thing when you're not used to it, especially something as technical as fire code. This is harder than most. But I want to read just from one section of that letter to the boathouse owners. It says, in an effort to be clear about the effect of the regulations, we can summarize these rules to say that the general effect is that the existing boathouse in Blaine Harbor, which does not have a sprinkler system, will be required to be brought up to the new standard within 5 years. And it goes on to talk about that it's likely to incur costs and that it is their responsibility. So we did want to make it really clear to people what was being proposed here. There's a broader effect with this. It does require that new facilities built in either of our marinas, not just boathouses, but other things like floats and docks, would potentially be built to a slightly different standard in regards to fire protection. Things like standpipes and some of the piping systems would be different. They might be able to hold a higher pressure volume and things like that. But there are exceptions for all the existing facilities for the most part. So the marina management in both the Port of Bellingham and the Semiahmoo Marina won't really be needing to make many changes to their existing facilities, but when things are built, they would be built to a slightly higher standard. The boathouse is really the key difference, or the key item that is not handled that way. And the way what will happen if this is adopted is the new rules will go into effect in a few days. And then during this year, the fire district will inspect the facilities, and those facilities which are not in compliance will, the owners or managers will receive a letter telling them that they're not in compliance and give them a deadline to, first of all, provide a plan for compliance, and then a plan, and that plan would include coming into compliance within 2 to 5 years, depending upon which route they take. For example, putting in a venting system, automatic vents that open to let the heat and smoke out, that's a 2-year window. If they're putting in a sprinkler, it's a 5-year window. And so if they say we're going to do a sprinkler, this is our plan, they have 5 years to implement that system. So it's not one of those things where you have to do it tomorrow, but there is a period of time and you need to comply. We've been working on this in cooperation with the district and the Port of Bellingham, because the Port of Bellingham is the only entity that has boathouses. That's really the key issue here, is the boathouses. We've been in communication with the Semiahmoo Marina Association. There's not a lot here that affects them unless they build new facilities, so they haven't been as engaged. The Port of Bellingham has been engaged. It's actually been a really good cooperative effort with the port and the fire district. I think everyone is pretty happy with the product, and the port being the ones who may have to spend a little more money in the future may not be thrilled with the outcome, but it has been a really good process. One thing to note is that the port is looking at doing a little bit more research on a couple of key items in here. So they have requested that you hold open the public hearing for 2 weeks, not make your decision tonight, so that they're able to come back in 2 weeks if they have some additional information and might request one or two changes on a couple of items. So Andy Peterson and Sylvia Goodwin from the port are here tonight. Of course, Mr. Hollander from the fire district is here tonight, all faces that you recognize, I'm sure. It doesn't look like any boathouse owners are here or any slip owners are here tonight. So it holding open the hearing for another couple weeks might be good from that perspective as well. But I will open the mic to other folks if they want to speak. And then if you have questions for me at the end, I'd be happy to address any of those questions. Does that work, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a public hearing. Is there anyone that would like to come forward and speak regarding the ordinance?
Well, that's pretty simple.
Okay. We will, my understanding is, Charlie, Dennis.
Any questions for me?
Michael, was there an update on some of the standpipes earlier? I thought. Okay.
I didn't understand the question. So yes, the Semiahmoor Marina had a non-functional system for a period of time, and in cooperation with the fire district and the police chief, they and the building official, they brought those up to standard, and now they do have a standpipe system that functions.
The other thing is, I think the Bellingham Power, is it the Power Group? They have some kind of a graduation ceremony tonight, and that may be why there's nobody here.
Oh.
Okay, Mary Lou has a question.
Michael, do we know whether or not the owners of particularly Boathouse 1 and 2 actually received your letter and acknowledged receipt of your letter?
They didn't acknowledge receipt of my letter,
so
no.
They might be absent, and therefore they may not have received this letter.
Yes. I mean, it is possible. We sent some of the letters went to Canada. Some of the letters, most of the letters went to the Bellingham, Whatcom County area. A couple of them went further south. One, I think, was addressed in California because that's where the slip owner is. But, you know, we presume that the mail gets delivered.
Okay, Michael, then we just want to hold this public hearing open for some more weeks.
Yes. So, Sherry, do you know the date of the next city council meeting?
June 8th.
So we would request that you hold open the meeting to a date certain, which is June 8th at 6 p.m.
Do you require a vote on that, or is that?
It would require a vote from your end on that to take that action.
Okay. Can we have a motion? Does anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
I move we hold over the public hearing to our next regular meeting.
Second. I second that motion.
Motion made and seconded. Any comments or questions regarding the motion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? And the motion to extend the public hearing for June the 8th?
That's correct.
Has been approved 7-0. Next item on the agenda is council action items. The first item being Ordinance 15-2863, amending Title 15. Establishing new boathouse and covered moorage fire regulations and amending certain marina fire code regulations. I assume that we may want to delay that.
Take no action.
Okay.
Would be our suggestion as you just continued the public hearing.
Okay. Anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
So moved. Second.
Motion is made and second to take no action regarding Ordinance 15-2863. Any further comments or questions? If not, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Next item on the council action items is 2016 Comprehensive Plan Update, Land Use Element Preliminary Acceptance. Soon that'll come forward for Mr. Jones.
I'm just going to get up and sit down, get up and sit down, get up and sit down. So this is, as you said, Mr. Mayor, 2016 Comprehensive Plan Land Use Update, but it is just a conceptual acceptance of this. This allows us to demonstrate to the Department of Commerce that we have brought this forward to council and that you've reviewed the draft. It's part of our grant with them, is that items go forward to council. We don't adopt the elements individually in a formal manner because each one may affect the next. For example, if you were to adopt the land use element and say, yes, this is exactly what we want to do, and then we review the transportation component of it and find that that requires some significant transportation improvements that we're unable to fund, we would then have to go back and undo what you did with the land use element and change it. So we want to just kind of conceptually review each of these as we go along. One of the important things I want to bring your attention to or remind you of is that what we're doing here is really more than anything is a cleanup of our comprehensive plan. We're not rethinking Blaine. That was something that the Planning Commission determined, and then we forwarded that to you, and council also determined that we're just fixing the numbers, changing the population count. If the city is taking a little bit of different direction here or there, like in the pipeline UGA, we're reflecting those changes. Other things that have been added in as time has, as various elements have been amended over the past several years, are being accounted for. Things like in the land use element, for example, when the full map is presented as part of the next version of this, you'll see that at the Peace Arch port of entry, a large area that used to be or today is designated for high density residential will be designated for public uses because it's now in the secondary inspection. It will never be high density housing. So we're addressing those kinds of just sort of cleanup items as we move along. Don't really have a presentation on the what's included in here unless you have questions on what's included in here. But what I will say is it's essentially our existing comprehensive plan with some amendments. And the staff report, the request for council action, does itemize the things that were presented, discussed with the Planning Commission, and the changes that were included.
Any of the council members have any questions? Dennis has a question.
Michael, under some of these actions, are these going to be in place, for example, on, I guess it's page 4 of 10?
So, to answer your question generally, is yes. These are things that are in our comprehensive plan now and are proposed to stay. There were some of these that were stripped out. We looked at some and said that's either been done already or that one's no longer appropriate or valid. But these that you see before you are ones that are there now that will remain. In a couple of instances, there are some that were added.
I just didn't remember the hotel motel restaurant being in the
yeah, that is in our comp plan now. I think it would go over like a lead balloon, frankly, with some of the neighbors, but that is in our comp plan now.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, the staff would like us to consider a motion to preliminary approve the land use element of the 2016 City of Blaine Comprehensive Plan Update. Is there anyone wishing to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
A second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the 2016 Comprehensive Plan Update, Housing Element Preliminary Acceptance.
I'm back. The item, again, very similar, looking for preliminary action on a comprehensive plan element or chapter. couple key items in the housing element, or the primary thing we did in the housing element really is updating numbers, showing new tables, and addressing new numbers related to cost of housing and distribution of housing by housing stock and housing type. Discussions at the Planning Commission were primarily focused around a section in the current comp plan, which they are proposing to remove, which is a target for 40% of new housing units to be medium or high density. Generally, the consensus there was that Blaine has a fair amount and a decent mix of apartments, condominiums in the existing community, and those are proposed in larger projects that we see coming forward, like East Maple Ridge and Grandis Pond. They include also things like small lot sizes for single family and cottage housing. So they wanted to take that out, not have that kind of a numerical target for a couple of reasons. One is they thought we had a fair amount already and we continue to build more, which is good. But also they didn't want, as the staff explained to them, that having a target like that makes it possible for us to be non-compliant and become a target if someone were to review us in the future on a housing issue. They could say we are not meeting our comprehensive plan goals because we're not hitting that 40% target with future housing. So they wanted to remove that. Staff was very supportive of including accessory dwelling units in some additional zones, particularly in the residential low-density zone, because those lots are larger and it's easier to accommodate a cottage on those lots or a garage apartment on those lots. We've also had three or four people come forward to us. A couple of them have written letters to the Planning Commission, to the Council. But the discussion at the Planning Commission was essentially came around to no, we don't want to add that now. We will consider discussing it in the future, but we didn't want to add that now. The other items here really are mostly, as I mentioned, changing numbers. So any questions on some of that or questions on the content of the chapter?
Bonnie has a question.
I have a question. Excluding East Blaine beyond Harvey.
Yes.
How many buildable lots are left in Blaine?
Oh, I don't know that off the top of my head.
I thought you told me one time.
Yeah, it's gone quite low. The number in just the central Blaine area, if we don't consider Semiahmoo, because that's isn't something I've been tracking the same way. Is now that the lots in Drayton Heart and in Drayton Reach are back in the inventory, so to speak, which is about 40 lots that have come back into the inventory, we probably are somewhere in the vicinity of 100. Drayton Reach was about half of what we had available, and we've had some short plats done up in the sort of Lincoln Park neighborhood, Lincoln Hill, or we need a name for that area. That has created some additional lots, so people have just recently taken lots that have been about an acre and split those into two or three or four lots. So that's changing our inventory a little bit, but that's the only thing that's really affecting our inventory. What's happening is lots that have been long-standing existing lots in the Sal Shannon and the Leonard Streets neighborhood are being built on. And that's where our inventory sits because we don't have any vacant plats. There are a couple of lots in Wilson Avenue Estates, which is the little cul-de-sac neighborhood by Gary Tomczyk's house, and there are the 40-some lots in Drayton Reach, but all of those lots in Drayton Reach will be developed by Watkins Gadget Housing. So they're not really in the inventory, but they will accommodate new residents. So we don't have a lot. It's really, it is a concern of mine, it's a very big concern of mine. We've talked about it quite a bit related to water and sewer services and how do we get the sewer services out beyond Lincoln Park so that area can develop. That's where all of our really developable inventory is, except for in Semiahmoo. Semiahmoo is great as inventory, but it's only for homes that are $500,000 and more. And so it's a entirely different product, and most of what we see selling in Blaine is homes that are about $250,000. So it's not really what's serving the majority of the buyers.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Other questions?
Question on page 2-5 on housing affordability. The discussion in there about the cost for owning a home is about 30% of income. Is that what I'm reading?
Well, that's a sort of a statistic accepted in the industry and in analysis of what's considered affordable is when you're allocating more than 30% of your income or your household income to housing, that is no longer considered affordable housing. It forces you to make choices on what you will give up in the other areas like food, medical care, recreation, and such. So it's not saying that's how much it costs to live in Blaine. It says that's what's affordable in the industry or in the country.
So that puts the numbers, what is it, 200,000 to 299, where this would fit. I guess my
that table is that table is the percent of homes that are in that cost, not the percent of income going towards those homes. The next table, figure 2.5, is the one that shows the percentage of income. The bottom part of that, the monthly housing costs.
And if you look at that table and you look at the ones that are renting, their percentage of what they have to spend for housing is quite a bit higher than if you owned your house. Is that right?
Generally, that has become the case, particularly over the recent years since the recession, is that those folks who are renting are often paying more than those folks who own their home. The rental market is such now that there's very, very low vacancy rates, and landlords are able to charge a higher rental than they have been able to in the past. Mortgage rates are incredibly low right now, and so if you can afford to purchase a home with a down payment, you will be a person paying less than someone who's in a rental.
Are we looking to make rentals affordable and as part of the construction and the development of it?
We're not taking any specific action to do that, no. We accommodate multifamily housing, so just by doing that with our lot sizes and with our zoning code, we make them available in Blaine. And so it to some degree, the higher availability makes them perhaps a little less costly to build and theoretically might make them less costly to rent because there are more of them, but we have no control over the landlords, or at least at this time we're taking no measures to control the landlords, so they're charging what they're charging. Until there are more multifamily homes in the available in the market and until the vacancy rate goes down, or until the vacancy rate goes up, it's going to be that way. It's a seller's marketplace.
Are there any further questions? If not, they were recommending that we consider a motion to preliminary approve the housing element of the 2016 City of Blaine Comprehensive Plan update. And I'd entertain a motion to that effect. Motion has been made.
Second.
And seconded. Any other further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0.
Thank you, Council.
Okay, the next item in the comprehensive action items is a professional service agreement for the Mitchell Avenue improvements.
Well, after that, this should be really simple, I would think.
Straightforward.
So we earlier gave an update on projects. Mitchell was the first project that was represented as fully funded. This contract is for design work for the project that we hope to get started on so that we can finish construction next year. I'm certainly available if there's any questions. However, staff recommends council authorize the city manager to execute this contract.
Questions for Raven?
I don't.
Okay, hearing none. Staff recommends that the council authorize the city manager to execute a contract with Wilson Engineering for engineering design services in an amount not to exceed $85,000. Would anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any other further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Next item on the agenda is to set a public hearing for the six-year transportation improvement program.
So traditionally, we do the public hearing and carry it over until the date of adoption. So if the public hearing is on our next meeting on June 8th, it leaves time for some public input before we adopt the TIP at your second meeting in June. It leaves us still compliant with having it adopted by the end of June.
Okay. Any questions for Raven regarding this item? Okay. Staff recommends that we set a public hearing for June the 8th, 2015. Consider transportation projects for the 2016-2021 six-year transportation improvement program to then be adopted by council by resolution. Anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Motion is carried 7-0.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is commission, committee, and board reports. First item on the agenda is the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Mr. City Manager, would you care to comment?
Council, we had a meeting last Tuesday, a week ago, and another one scheduled for this coming Tuesday the 2nd. So invitation open to those who want to attend. We have council members that are on that committee and look forward to seeing you. It starts at 3 o'clock. Primary purpose of the meeting is to go over some recommendations we're going to get from a consultant on some scoping of our next steps.
Okay, any questions for David? Thank you. Steve, do we have any on tourism and advisory committee or the Boys and Girls Club?
No report.
Bonnie, how about the Blaine Chamber of Commerce?
I have no report for the Chamber of Commerce, but we did get a red loan application.
Oh, wonderful.
That's been quite a while since we've received an application, sure. And the committee approved it.
Fantastic.
So it wasn't for a real large sum, but it will enable these folks to improve their business and hopefully grow even more.
That's terrific. Are we in a position to announce who that is, or?
I don't think so.
Okay,
yet.
We'll keep that confidential. Okay,
yeah.
Super.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, WTA Board, Mr. Greenow.
No report.
Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee.
They took the red tide warning off.
That's good.
Okay. Dennis, how about the library or the Senior Center Liaison?
The library group met in their
into expanding the library, so you'll be hearing.
Good.
Senior Center, they've started work on the pavilion. They got the footings formed up. They're going along.
Okay. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones, or the Park and Cemetery Board?
No report from the Planning Commission or the Park and Cemetery Board this evening.
Yes, ma'am.
Michael, could you let us have a bit of an update on the, quote, seagrass?
Certainly, the Planning Commission isn't addressing anything related to seagrass. We have been receiving quite a bit of communication from the property owner. They're interested in moving forward with a project of some sort or another. And it appears just as late as about 4:30 this afternoon when I got out of a meeting, what they're going to move forward on is bringing in a couple of different applications. One would be to essentially renew their shoreline substantial development permit to build two duplexes on some lots that are very close to the existing view shelter that's down there, so that part of the seagrass property. Those lots are designated for duplexes, so the proposal is consistent with their plan that's approved, consistent with the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan. And the only reason they need a permit, a new shoreline permit, is because shoreline permits are only valid for 2 years. If you don't start construction within 2 years, then you have to get a new permit. So it's likely that that will go to the Planning Commission this summer. And they intend to essentially more or less fit within the existing footprints. And they've redesigned the proposal as far as the unit type. They are hoping to learn from some of the lessons at Marin, where they want to make sure that these units have large enough closets that people can actually live there rather than just visit there, and large enough bathrooms that people feel comfortable and can get around if they have limited mobility and might be in a wheelchair. And they're looking at these as downsizing units primarily for folks that already maybe live in Semiahmoo, but not primarily, but serving that market in addition to folks who are otherwise interested in living in the area or visiting the area. So that's one thing that's happening. And then also, because the rest of the project was designed as larger multifamily units, fourplexes, there's a 16-plex, there's a 12-plex. Some of those would no doubt be 45 feet tall, which is the maximum building height out there, because fitting 16 units in a building, you're probably going to go to the full height. They're actually going to probably come in with a proposal of only duplexes on all of the lots, which would likely mean shorter units. It does reduce the density a bit. Not as much as you might think, but it does reduce the density a bit. And that is different enough that it is not something I can approve administratively. It becomes, rather than a PUD modification, it's a PUD amendment. And the PUD amendment goes through the full process. So it will go to a neighborhood meeting, the Planning Commission will hold a public hearing, and it will come to City Council for a final decision. That also would most likely require, and since I haven't seen it, I don't know for sure, but I would say most likely would require a master plan amendment, and that's a comprehensive plan amendment. It's not a big change, you know, but it is remapping the units as they lay out and changing the unit count there. I think that's something that we would want to consider as a master plan amendment. And so they're coming forward basically to build duplexes is what they're looking at. I think they will submit that soon as well, from the sound of things, and would like to see that go through the process this year so that they could have some model units already on the ground out there from the first permit that I mentioned, and then be able to sell and market those so they can break ground in the spring on additional units. So it'll be nice to see some development on the spit. Those will really, I think, help create that community sense out there rather than the sort of somewhat isolated hotel at the end of the beach. That's the status. But honestly, we've received nothing except some questions and emails and things like that. We're waiting for an application.
Michael?
Did that spur your interest?
Michael, so those are actual duplexes and not attached dwellings?
They would actually be duplexes because the zoning code doesn't allow attached single-family units, because it doesn't allow single-family units.
So that would be like either someone buying the entire unit as rentals or living in one. So there will necessarily be rental units.
I think most likely what they're going to do is to condominiumize all the duplexes in one condominium association, and then they would sell the individual condominiums. So they'd be built as duplexes. They'd be co-owned by the two condo owners, but then the airspace within each half would be wholly and fully owned by each individual condominium owner. So it would be built as a duplex, but owned and practically function as two single-family units attached.
Okay.
You can do interesting things with condominiumization. So you could have two full-time owners living right next door to each other, neither one of them renting from the other.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But you could have people that buy both units and choose to rent one out. Although that's not the market they're going for. More likely, those that might be rentals would be ones that would be rented by the owner as like a short-term rental, a summer season rental or something.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, Public Works Advisory Committee.
No new report, sir. Our next meeting is next Monday at 2 p.m.
Small Cities Caucus, no report. Whatcom Council of Governments, no report. North Whatcom Fire Update.
Good evening, Council. Shared with you our monthly newsletter. Just point out a couple of things that as of the end of April, we've already had 1,126 calls for service. And for the month, the city of Blaine had 62 calls. Semiahmoo had 6. And our response time still hovers up for Semiahmoo still hovers around that 12-minute window. It's pretty consistent. We did have one call of interest in Blaine, one fire. All calls are interesting, but fire call. TC Trading last week, one of those semi-trailers that was caught on fire. I understand it was loaded with steaks and lobsters for the cruise line. Yeah, that's what I said.
And
it was total loss, unfortunately. They had to write it all off. We will still be investigating that fire with the insurance company. And if you don't have any other questions, that's about all I have for this week.
Okay, I had a question
yes,
asked
sir?
Of me today. With the 4th of July coming up, and dry weather, is there anything that should be out to the public about the fireworks and whatever?
There will be, regardless of the weather. There's always fireworks safety promoted. All fireworks stands are inspected. The fireworks show is inspected. We put together an incident action plan for that day with our partners at the police department and the Sheriff's Department, and we staff heavy for it. Other than that, some July 4th, we've run 27 calls, and some July 4th, we've run 5. So it can be hit or miss. But I understand, I think what you're asking me is because it's so dry, it wouldn't surprise me to see the county put a burn ban on before the 4th, or a temporary burn ban, but that's a county decision. And then the city usually follows along.
And now
Five, four. It's less than the state standard, yeah.
First through.
Yeah, the city has its own ordinance for fireworks that is a less confined window than the state's.
Don't we have up to the 5th? Or did we?
Now I'm going to have to look up the ordinance.
It seemed to me we extended it to the 5th and just give them one more night to use up what was left over.
We were giving them the next part of the next day on the 5th. And
yeah, wasn't it the then. First of the 5th?
Yeah.
I just read it and I already forgot it.
Yeah,
and we have in years past, both the Port of Bellingham and Semiahmoo Park have been helpful in erecting no fireworks signs at the entrances to their properties as well, which has been really helpful, especially for the marina.
And all the fireworks stands, permits have already come through. Permits, the applications have already come through, and the show application has already come through.
No new stands than normal.
No stands that are not, that haven't been in years past.
We usually have two or three at the most.
One at the Shopping Center and one out on Bell Road by the Building Center are the two that I have. Yeah.
And our ordinance says that the sales are the first through the fourth, but as the Chief Haskett said, they're allowed to use them to a certain time frame on the fifth.
But can they use them on the fifth? Can they shoot them off on the fifth?
Between the hours of 9 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Right.
Okay. Remember, again, that would only be in the city limits of Blaine. The period is extended in the county because the county adopted a state standard. So if you're just outside the city limits, people can shoot fireworks before and after.
Okay. We're still going to have our regular fireworks show.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming so. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Chief.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Department reports, public works, project update.
To try to be brief this evening. Now that we have completed the fabrication of the flagpole outside, our crew is busily working on the missing entry signs so that we can have those back up for the fourth. They've been totally repainted. We have some incredible in-house talent. You cannot tell that they're not brand new. But the post has been a big challenge, not only trying to figure out a retrofit, but also to get the existing posts out. We put wood posts inside a plastic sleeve, and the wood has swollen to the point where we can't even pull it out with our line truck. Let's see. Already mentioned the next Public Works Advisory Committee. So you've probably noticed, Peace Portal Bridge is quite closed. And the detour is in place. We have out to bid our water main for that project. So we're hoping to dovetail and take advantage of the road closure so that our work doesn't further impact our residents. And then the last thing I wanted to cover, is as you can see in this picture, this is at the dead end of Steen Street, and it has turned into, it has been a historical dumping ground for the Salish and neighbors' yard waste. There is no permits that have been obtained for this use, and it is right now gotten to the point where we have a hydrant in there that is totally buried, and we have water valves that can't get access. So at this point, our recommendation is that Public Works remove the waste and put up some no dumping signs, and that enforcement be stepped up in that regard. But I wanted to cover that with you first before we take such an action. I've already gotten several emails, because word gets out that I'm that we're planning this, and there's a lot of concern by the Salish neighborhood folks about where they're going to take their yard waste. Sorry, I have a tickle.
Well, they need to have it picked up like the rest of us.
Yeah. So that would be my response, but because things that are controversial ultimately get to you, I wanted to let you know first, see if there was something different that you wanted me to do. Clearly, if the city was going to take on a clean green type of program like Bellingham, we would need appropriate permits, and we would charge a fee and all the things that Bellingham does. But in any event, it's very problematic for us gotten to the point where it's very problematic for us in terms of our utilities. So
Are we going to clear it out and kind of level it to the point where if someone does dump, it's very obvious?
We'll do our normal, wonderful job. Okay.
Will we be putting up a sign that says...
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah. No dumping. Yeah. You know, I have to say I cringe. I did traffic management for several years in my career, and my least favorite sign was the no dumping, because I always felt like it was an invitation. Right? No, I never thought about dumping there. I guess I will. But in this case, I think it's appropriate. And certainly when we're working with PD to
cite the ordinance on the sign.
Have you
Has there been contact with the Salisham neighborhood group?
Well, somehow it got out that we were talking about this. So it not officially. I can certainly drop the letter to the Neighborhood Association folks if you'd like, and just kind of let them know that. Mm-hmm. We would certainly much rather this not be a difficult thing. So I think that's very reasonable, sir. That's all I have for a project update. I'm not hearing any divisive plots there. So. Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Community Development Services. Jones.
Alex Wenger's daughter is graduating from preschool tonight. And otherwise, he would be here, and I kind of had hoped he would be here so I could thoroughly embarrass him before all of you. But I guess he gets off easy. Alex has been studying on and off for a couple of years for the AICP exam. The AICP exam is it's an exam for professional recognition for planners among our colleagues. It's nationwide recognition. What they do is they address issues like ethics, professional development, planning education, and standards for planning practice. There are a tremendous range of questions. You know, planners are jacks of all trades, so when you take that test, you have no idea what's going to be on it, so there's a lot of studying involved. Alex passed his test on the 13th, so if you see Alex, please say congratulations to him. You may not know this, but Alex's degree is not in planning, so this was a particular challenge for him. His degree is in math, and he came to planning by way of GIS. So he's really been on the job training in practice here, and I'm very proud of him, and I think you all should be as well. He's an interesting guy, and if you watch him at the counter with people, you really get the impression that he really, really, really wants to provide good customer service and help people with their projects. There's an email that he received today that he passed along to me that I want to read a little bit of it to you. Some of it's, I think, a little too detailed related to the incident for you to put it on the record. But it starts off with, "Thank you so much for your generosity of time you provided me this morning regarding the neighborhood boundary dispute my husband and I are having." It goes on to talk about how the police became involved and how it was difficult and challenging and how the police successfully kind of diffused the situation. And in closing, it says, "Thank you. Thank you for your assistance. Without it, I do not believe we would have felt as calm in the face of fury. Thank you even more for your detail and patience this morning. I would never have expected as much help as you provided without feeling any pressure at all from you to hang up. Thank you. Please let me know whom I should formally send my gratitude, as you are truly deserving of an official pat on the back for simply being you." I gave him that pat on the back, but I thought that coming in time with the announcement of his passing of the AICP exam was kind of appropriate. So please, when you see him, take a moment to congratulate him on his exam. Thank you.
Michael, one question. How are we making out with signs tacked to trees?
Well, that's... Well, not making out very well, actually, because Mr. Beck still has it there. We have been working on a plan to proactively address signs in the downtown. Given that that's the only sign attached to a tree, I'm not opposed to taking sort of some individualized action, but what we have been doing is developing a more cohesive plan that is more of an education and enforcement action. You raise a good point, and I'm probably ought to just address all signs tacked to trees in our downtown and take action related to that. On A-frame signs, we're putting together an information flyer that explains how to do a good A-frame sign and what's legal in the city limits. And we're doing we're actually bringing in someone from the Small Business Center from Western to come to the next Chamber of Commerce meeting to talk about what makes good signs. And there'll be a little bit of information in there related to enforcement. And then we're going to take more of a direct approach to our downtown business owners on the A-frame signs and some of the other overdone signage.
Okay.
It's mostly signage in the right-of-way that we're looking at addressing. But like I said, I'll do something about all the signs on trees in our downtown corridor.
Michael, on the, those A-frame signs, if those are used for a single event, is there, are there any stipulations about that?
There really isn't a different stipulation for event and temporary signage. There are some items related to it from that perspective, not from the perspective of that they are A-frame signs, and there are some limits on how long they can be up. Okay. One of the challenges with those signs is when the event's over, everyone's really, really tired, and sometimes they all just go home, and then the signs stay up for a few days. Or long.
Okay. Name is Public Safety Chief.
No formal report this evening, Your Honor, but I just wanted to take a moment since Chief Hollander was here. We had an unfortunate fatality incident on Marine Drive a couple of evenings ago, and I just wanted to say between our officers who were on scene, Officer Jason Torgerson and John Landis, and the North Whatcom Fire Crew, there were some very heroic efforts applied to first reach the victim in the crash and to extricate him. It was above and beyond the call, both with Officer Berg and Officer Martin and the entire crew that was on scene that evening from North Whatcom, and also from our officers assisted by the Border Patrol. It was above and beyond, and it was an unfortunate outcome, but I want to let you folks know that everyone there did their darndest in that incident. So, thank you. Any questions I can answer for anyone?
Okay, thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Next item is Administrative Services. Oh, no, excuse me. Finance. I'm trying to get that one. I had to get by that one quick, didn't I?
No chance.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
We don't have a plan.
Okay, so I'm going to give the 2015 first quarter report, and you have the report in your packet. So I'm sure the question on everyone's mind is, how is the decline of the Canadian dollar impacting the city's revenues? And I can say that this report will show that it's mixed. When we get into sales tax, talk about sales tax revenue, from retail sales, it is holding steady. But as you heard in the your study session earlier about the penny per gallon gas tax, that's a different story. It's has declined by about 14%. However, looking at other indicators that are shown in the report, those are holding steady as well. So then looking at our general fund overall, our actual general fund revenue came in at right at 25% of the budget. So good news there. And then looking at our expenditures, they were about 22%. Of the budget. And then our general fund operating ending fund balance is above the target by about 35% or $155,000. And then our reserve, general fund reserve, as you recall last year, we built that back up and we're within about $15,000 of the policy target for the reserve. And then looking specifically at sales tax revenue, we're right on 25% of the budget forecast. Now keep in mind, there's a two-month lag when we receive the sales tax revenue as reported to the state. So this would be January's figures, but recall the decline in the Canadian dollar began in 2014. So we're still holding steady given the circumstances. So then compared year-over-year comparison for sales tax revenue, we're actually 9% higher than first quarter of 2014. And this chart here shows the steady increase in sales tax revenue from retail sales. So it's those package stores. It's grown by 5% alone between 2013 and 2014. So it's pretty astounding. And again, as I've mentioned in numerous reports before, I think this comes from our package, the deliveries in the city. And I just happened to call a couple of our businesses locally and just kind of get an anecdotal sense of what they're seeing, and they say that they're not seeing any major or significant decreases in their business. So that's the good news, is that currently our sales tax revenue is holding pretty steady. Then looking at general fund revenues, our actual year-over-year actual comparison, we're about 3% higher compared to 2014. And that's in line with our projected revenue, what we projected in the budget, about 2 to 3% higher compared to last year. And then our general fund expenditures are down about 6%. And first quarter last year were some major capital purchases made, but this year there were not, so that's why you see that variance. So then looking at our utilities, the electric fund, revenue from sales was down, or revenue from sales compared to the budget is at 28%, but compared to 2014 first quarter, we're down 2%. And I think what's happening there, looking at consumption, it's warmer weather patterns. You know, we had a warmer winter, so people did not turn on their heaters as much. So therefore, you have a decline in the consumption. So as you know, that the comp study for the electric fund is being conducted, as well as a rate study is in progress. So I think those studies are going to help analyze trends and some of the factors that could impact this fund in the future. And then our operating expenses were 20% of the budget and about 12% lower compared to 2014. And then our operating fund balance, our policy target for this fund is 60 days of operating expenditures. And as you can see there, we are through the first quarter above the policy target. Looking at the water fund, revenue from sales compared to the budget is 21%. And then compared to last year's first quarter, we're down 3%. And again, this what we're seeing, the year-over-year decrease, I think is largely due to the reclaimed water sales that are going to the wastewater fund.
We'll take care of that.
We might have an unseasonably warm summer, so hopefully people will water their lawns. And then expenditures, compared to the budget, 21%, and then 52% higher compared to 2014. The reason for that year-over-year variance is that we have higher budgeted transfers this year to our capital improvements for a few water projects that are in our CIP. And then the ending operating balance for the water fund, we need to have at least 30 days of operating expenditures, and we are well above the target there. Looking at wastewater, we're at 24% of the budget, and then compared to last year, just a little slight variance there. It's under 1%, so not really concerned. And then expenditures at 14% of the budget, and then compared to last year at 21%. And that year-over-year variance was due to some timing of equipment purchases in this year's budget. And then if you keep in mind, it's mid-year when all our debt service payments are due for the wastewater fund. And so our operating fund balance is well above our target, but we have to build that up until we get to the mid-year to make, as I mentioned, those debt service payments. And then the stormwater fund at 25% of the budget revenue, and then compared to last year, slight under 1% decrease. And then our expenditures are at 19% and 8% higher compared to 2014. And our operating balance in that fund is well above the target. So then looking at some of our economic indicators, looking at utility taxes, and this is a general fund revenue source, and we're right on target compared to budget. I believe we're about 24 and 25% for all sources of utility taxes. And then as I mentioned, the penny per gallon gas tax. So we're at 20% of the forecast, but we're 14%, seeing a 14% decrease in our year-over-year comparison. So you could argue, yes, the decline of the Canadian dollar could be having some impact, but I think there's some other variables involved, and I think a major variable has been the price of gas, the price of oil. And so that's had an impact, certainly on the behavior patterns of our neighbors to the north and whether they buy gas here or up north. But I'll continue to monitor that, those trends, and see by mid-year if we need to do some adjusting to the street fund. And then our hotel-motel tax, which I'm sure the BTAC, the committee, has seen this, is that trend-wise, we're doing very well at 22% of our budget. But compared to 2014, we're 46% higher. So we're doing very well there. And you've heard us talk about REIT, heard staff talk about REIT in the study session. Right now, we're about 19% higher compared to 2014. REIT has a cyclical pattern to it, or cyclical trend, because most of our revenue comes typically during the summer months. You have people selling their homes more so during that time period. And then lastly, looking at property taxes, you can see it's a little too early to tell to see if we're on target. We'll get our first major bump after May, so by that time we'll be able to see if we're matching our trends. So, as I said, you know, it seems like sales tax revenues is holding steady overall. I would say we're doing fairly stable. We'll keep an eye on the penny per gallon gas tax. Any questions?
Okay, administrative services. Sherry, do you have any to add to that?
Good evening, Council. A couple of things I was going to mention were already brought up: our Crosby Centennial, 125-year anniversary on May 20th. And then Roger Brown retirement. I do want to remind you of the AWC conference in Wenatchee in June 23rd through the 26th. We've missed the early bird discount, but you can still register. And if you're interested, just get a hold of me. Raven's going, correct? And then back in 2011, we had our last cleanup day. And I received a telephone call from Chris Tusky with Whatcom County Disposal of Toxics, probably early March, that they wanted to come up to Blaine. And they get grants that allow them to do two events a year. And so they always do one event in Bellingham, and then the other event is in some other city. It could be Blaine or Ferndale or Point Roberts. So this year they had already planned to do Blaine. So we put together a recycle day with the sanitary services and also Safe and Easy Electronics. We had one person kind of oversee it for the sanitary services because they just dropped off their curbside truck. And that was Dylan Jones, Michael Jones' son. and it was on the 23rd from 10 to 3. And I talked to, not Chris Testy, but one of the other people with Whatcom County Disposal Toxins. And this was one of the better events that they'd held in a long time. They had 122 customers, and they hauled away 21 containers of hazardous material. That was followed by Safe and Easy. They had a 26-foot U-Haul. They packed it before 3 o'clock, and so they were able to drive off by 3. And then sanitary services for the curbside, they did about 300 pounds, which is about a quarter of a truck. It's not as much, but the thing with that is that people usually do their curbside every 2 weeks. So in a way, that's good if they don't have all that curbside. So anyway, it was actually a very good event. Dave received an email from somebody that was happy that we had done the Recycle Day. And I do want to thank Sam. He's had put all the information on the website and provided the ad for the paper. And so anyway, if you have any questions. Okay, thank you.
Okay. City Manager. Rick?
I just have a very brief report. First off, at the next meeting, Sam's going to put a little presentation on the status of city cleanup. You know, we've had, it's been a priority for us, and so we've been looking at the ordinances and the strategy. So he's going to be speaking to you about that because we're going to be starting that. And we wanted to make sure everybody knew about it and got it out there so that when phone calls start to come and people start to wonder what we're doing, it's well publicized. So we're going to do that. I do have a short executive session tonight, 15 minutes. I need to talk to you about collective bargaining. And then I'm going to be out of town starting tomorrow. I'll be back on a Monday evening. And so I'll be having someone be an acting city manager for me while I'm gone. Any questions or comments? Direction?
Okay, any unfinished business? Or council new business? Okay, Hearing none, we'll now break for executive session to discuss collective bargaining pursuant to RCW 42.30.140, four in brackets. And how long do we anticipate this to take?
15 minutes.
Oh, 15 minutes, and do we plan any action? No action is being planned, and so we will break for executive session and return hopefully within 15 minutes.